speakers. We ask that you please take a moment before we begin to silence and put away your cell phones and other electronic devices. We thank you ahead of time. My name is Danny, and I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Danny.
This is an open meeting of the Beacon Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting, declining outside contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institutions. It does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The Beacon Group insists on providing a safe and effective meeting place so all who wish to may recover from alcoholism. Therefore, we ask all attendees to foster a secure and welcoming environment, refraining from any behavior that may compromise another's safety. As our traditions remind us, our common welfare is paramount. Each member of Alcoholics Anonymous is but a small part of a great whole. For more information about safety in AA, see the AA safety card and the safety in AA, our common welfare. Please join me in the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
All right, tonight, Mickey will read the steps.
All right, hello, I'm Mickey. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Mickey.
One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs.
Thank you, Mickey. Great shirt and better reading of the steps. The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers followed by our main speaker, who will speak for 30 minutes. All of our meetings are recorded and accessible on our website, beacongroupaa.com. We support AA statements of unity and anonymity, and therefore ask all our speakers to identify by first name only and to refrain from using profanity, please. Tonight, our first 10-minute speaker is Ava.
Hi, I'm Eva, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Eva.
I'm going to sit. I'm doing this with a microphone for the first time, so this is cool. So yeah, I'm Eva, I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is December 30th, 2021. It's my first sobriety date. It's my favorite. I started coming to AA about 3 or so years ago, a little less than 3 years. September 28th or 29th was my first meeting, and I never stopped coming, but I had a hard time getting sober at the beginning. And lately I'm actually thinking back on how long it took me to get the time that I have today with like a lot of gratitude. This has been a slow process for me, and I wouldn't have it any other way, because like I've seen my disease. I saw it before I came into the rooms from one perspective, and then like when I had the information that Alcoholics Anonymous equipped me with, I was able to really see that I had this thing and to really, really want a solution. Because I'm pretty scared of what I'm like with a drink in my hand. So is there, before I get too deep, is there anyone like new to AA around here? Like new to AA? All right, hey, welcome. Very glad you're here. For the first year or two in sobriety, I went through the steps for the first time with my sponsor. It was a really transformative experience, and I didn't do it perfectly, and I'm only realizing now in the second go-around just how much that round of steps was like absolutely necessary for me to like clear out just like the baseline. Who am I today? Why can't I stop drinking? Why can I like absolutely not stop drinking and breaking things? Like why am I incapable of building a life that is happy? How am I not able to like control and manage and enjoy my life at the same time? Like and why do these decisions that I make always lead me back to oblivion, which is what I want when I'm in that place of like it's nothing but me against the world. Like a drink sounds really good. So the steps for the first time helped me see that and clear that away. And by the time I got a full year sober, I had worked the steps. I had what I consider like a spiritual experience that really changed me. And I could see the change in my life, and I was happy about that. And I had a community for the first time. And I had a life that was built entirely in sobriety. I moved cities, I moved jobs, all of that good stuff. But there was something that was like, that I wasn't okay. I could like feel that deep down, that like, that restless, irritable, and discontent wasn't gone. I just like, I think I was just really like thirsty. Like I was like, I need something right now. Like I need something that's gonna make me feel better. And I have tried drinking and drugs and that didn't work. And I tried people who are gonna save me and change me and that didn't work. And I tried, you know, all of these things that I thought were gonna be the fix, because there's something wrong with me and something is going to have to fix me. And I'm in the steps again, and I'm working in a workshop that's been really, really powerful. And so I apologize for skipping most of the drunk log. Trust me, I'm an alcoholic. I drank too much, too often, for too long. Even though I'm like pretty young still, it was dark enough and scary enough, fast enough, that I was at my end by 21, and I needed a solution, and I wanted that. So I wanted to talk about that more. If I've only got 10 minutes, you all know what it looks like to drink. It's funny because I also like don't really know how to talk about this part of my recovery, because it feels very, very fresh to me, and it feels exciting and scary to read this book for the first time with this idea that like everything that they're saying in here, everything that Bill wrote in here, what if it were actually like really deeply true for me? That idea, when I read this book in that lens, and I have people who have been in it for a very long time and who have seen the beauty of it and the darkness of life in sobriety, like when I really take this thing seriously, like it's really kind of messing with my mind. So I'll talk a little bit about my experience, but there was a line that jumped out to me. I read We Agnostics a couple of days ago, and there's a line on page 45 that if I really read this the first time I was going through the steps, I don't know if I would have continued. There's a lot of that I'm uncovering right now. Thank you. And that line is, they're talking about lack of power is our dilemma. We have to find a power greater than ourselves that we can live by. And the line that really jumped out to me is, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. So I'm not solving my problem here. I didn't come to AA to solve my problem, so that I could solve my problem. I didn't come to AA so I could be a better person and that was gonna solve my problems. I didn't come to AA so I could learn to manage my life. I came to AA and I was asked to really look at how powerless I was really look at how unmanageable my life is. And in that step one, gather as much willingness as I possibly could to sort of give up the gun and like stop trying and stop pushing in all areas of my life, to really, really consider the fact that like I cannot control and enjoy my life. I can't manage this. I can't run the ship. And that's really, really difficult for someone like me who thinks that they're not okay just like baseline as is. Like I'm always working on like a minus two. So in step one, I really garnered that. I was asked to do two things. I was asked to make a list with two columns. One was the things in my life that I wanted to stop doing but I couldn't in sobriety, and the things that I wanted to start doing but couldn't start doing. And that was a really good way for me to check in with where I was actually in my life today and what I was actually trying to like secure so that I could feel all right. And then step two has been really interesting on the second go, because I'm like, I know I have a concept of a higher power. I have faith in that higher power. But then I was asked to do something else. They were like, all right, you don't actually have to do this, but consider this even as a thought experiment if you want. For the next week, act as if there is no God. Don't pray, don't meditate, don't do any of that kind of stuff. Walk around the world as if there is no God and see how your life goes. And I was like, I can't possibly do that. I'd burst into flame. I'd die immediately. I can't do this without God. And then I sort of did it. And nothing was different. Nothing was different. Most of the time, I have a persistent agnosticism. I walk around the world like I'm the higher power in my life. And that was really difficult for me to look at, because I'm like, I thought I was doing this thing all right. I thought I was in the program. I thought I was doing the work. I thought this was working. It's kept me sober for as long as it has. And I'm like, what's the deal here? And they're like, all right, that's good information. That's more good information. Let's keep going. And finally, like, I got to step three, and step three has been really beautiful for me lately. And again, like I'm seeing parts of the book that I never understood, like the part about the actor and the director and all of that kind of stuff, and the idea that like the patient, kind, self-sacrificing, modest, that like good stuff that I'll do to try to get what I want from the world is equivalent. Am I at 1 minute? Thank you. Is about equivalent to the angry, indignant, get like bulldozing my way through life. Like those things are actually the same for me. I'm still in a point where I am trying to get my way, and that is what is causing this feeling of like, I don't know if it's that I want to drink, but it's like I don't want to be alive anymore and I don't want to do this anymore. And then I finally get to step three, and they're like, good, you don't have to. You know, you don't have to do this. You can do something else. You can lean into this solution. I can lean into this solution, and I'm trying to do that right now, where I'm looking at my relationship with a higher power, which is what I'm here for, and which is what I've come to realize is my real only option here. And it looks like I'm just trying to read the book for the first. I'm just trying to really read the book and really believe the book. And what they're telling me is like, that there is a concept of God within me, and the work is to clear the space away so that I can rely on that in a moment-to-moment basis, and to make, you know, God the principal and I'm the agent. So it's not me trying to live my life anymore. I'm in the service of something bigger, and it's not, and you know, like, I get to be a kid again, and I get to be a child, and God gets to be my parent, and I get to trust that I'm, like, learning and growing and in the care of something else, and I don't have to do it for myself. I don't have to take care of myself anymore. Like, that's insane. That's super insane, but that's a spiritual, that's like feeling true for me on a material and spiritual level for the first time. And then the other one, like the director, actor, thank you. Yeah, I just want to be an actor. I don't want to direct this thing. I don't really trust my direction anymore. Like, I've shown myself that like that's not a happy life for me. I'm pretty good at getting stuff, and I'm really hard at really bad at keeping them, and I'm really bad at getting the things I want to make me happy to actually make me happy. So I'm trying to turn it over, and next comes the fourth step, and I'm struggling with the willingness for that. I'm excited though. I'm actually excited about it. And that's where I'm at today in the program. And yeah, that's all I got. Thanks for helping me share.
Thank you, Ava. Thank you, Ava. That was wonderful. We will now observe the seventh tradition. AA has no dues or fees for AA membership, but we do have expenses. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. Since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, DSO has withdrawn approximately $4.5 million from the reserve fund. AA's usual suggestion is a $2 contribution per meeting. We are passing the basket, but you may also observe the seventh tradition digitally on Venmo. There's a QR code in the basket, and our Venmo handle is @beacon-group. Again, although there are no dues or fees for AA membership, we do have expenses. Our rent is $400 a month. Please give what you can and see our treasurer, Megan, with any questions.
Just a quick announcement. We're paying an extra $50 per night to be here in the AC. We were a little short last month with the extra expenses, so if you could think about that as you're contributing tonight and over the next month, that would be appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you, Megan. All right. AA also has a set of traditions which apply to the group in the same manner that the 12 steps apply to the individual tonight. Tonight, Marianne has been asked to read the 12 traditions.
Hi, I'm Marianne. I'm an alcoholic. One, the 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority. A loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you, Marianne. The Beacon Group is run by a business meeting which meets on the third Wednesday of each month at 9 p.m. following this meeting for at least through August. It's in a hybrid format both here through August at Temple Beth Zion Road in St. Paul's Church and online. This is an opportunity to get more involved. All group members are encouraged to attend and participate. We hope you can join us. Will all group members please raise their hands? Go find one of these people if you want to ask how you can get involved and when the business meeting is, if you forgot what I said because it was confusing. All right. And now let's welcome our 10-minute speaker, my man, Billy P.
Hey, guys. My name's Billy. I'm an alcoholic. Grateful to be here. Honored to speak. Thank you, Brian, for asking me to speak. When I walked through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, I had already pretty much expired every attempt to do this on my own. my first decision was not, I'm going to go to AA and see what wisdom they have. My decision was, I'm doing this on my own. First, I tried to stop and moderate my drinking, limit it, control it. That didn't work. Then I figured out I had to stop drinking. That didn't work. And I got to a point in my life where I realized that I was going to die as a result of this disease, and there just was no other way around it. And then I got lower. And when I got lower, my thought was, I will make that happen myself, if you know what I mean. So if you want to know what it looks like when an alcoholic like me takes matters into his own hands and is his own higher power, as the previous speaker so well put, that's what it looks like. When I come in here, I had been through, I had bypassed all my warning signs, all my I'll quit drinking ifs and all that other stuff. You know, if I hurt my family, I'll quit, right past it. If a doctor tells me that I'm getting sick, I'll quit, right past it. On and on and on and on. And my choices to come into this program, I don't know what made me come in. I honestly don't, because my ego was so fragile. And when I mean fragile, it was out of control. And my fear was so great. I just don't know what made me come in, other than the grace of a God that I wasn't looking for. I wasn't looking for any of this. I came in here, and I didn't. The arrogance part I talk about is, though, even though I was at my lowest point, even though I tried everything in the human realm to get me to stop drinking and failed, even though I was at that point they describe in step one of being beyond human aid and all that other stuff, even though I was there, I still came in here thinking, I'm not going to stay here long. You guys with your coffee and your God and your all that other stuff and your cigarettes, I'm not going to need that. I need you to tell me how to quit drinking, and then I'm going to take care of you. What I found when I came in here was I projected being that guy that had it together and just drank a little too much, but I was a mess. I was suicidal. The consequences of my drinking had stacked up tremendously. I left a wake of pain, you know, behind me. And when I came into this room, I got nothing but people that were welcome. And they didn't try to sell me on anything, and they didn't try to sell me on a particular God or any of those things. I got so much compassion from people when I came in here because they saw what I really was, which was a scared little boy. And they gave me compassion. But also, something else happened. The men in these rooms, in these halls, were firm with me. And they treated me like the kid that I was. And they said a lot of things like, you know, listen, this, you're pointing the finger at everyone in your life. Mommy, daddy, the cops, your coaches, everything like that. That's who you think is to blame for this, it ain't. You're the reason you're here. Now, whatever happened to you, that's fine. You are the reason you're here. You're in complete control of whether or not you stay here for the solution or not. And they made it very clear to me that if I stayed here, I could find a solution. If I did the one thing in my life I could never do, take direction, then I would find a solution. And they based that off their own experience. They didn't know anything about me. They based it off their own experience of being hopeless and helpless and miserable and having a life second to none by doing this work. So I slowly started to do that. I had one foot in the old life, because that's where I wanted to be, but I couldn't. And one foot in AA, which is where I didn't want to be, but I realized it was my only solution. And what I did was, when I started to take direction, I did the stuff you guys are probably familiar with. I started to make different groups my home group, and I took service positions, and I got a sponsor, and I started to work the steps. And all of a sudden, I'll be damned, everything they said that would help me began to help me. And I began to change. I began to experience that revolutionary, that complete turn of change that I was required for me in order to recreate my life. It was explained to me that this isn't about just quitting drinking, which I thought it was, and that's really all I wanted. Thank you. This was about a complete change in revolutionary thought, that drinking was a symptom of a deeper cause, that everything's a symptom of a deeper cause, that my cause, my problem, was of a spiritual malady, and that spiritual malady could be treated by the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I sought to just treat the drink, then something else would pop up in its place. and I started to get that look. And it took a long time over my sobriety to kind of learn those pitfalls, because there came the time that they talk about in the 10th step, in the 10th step promises, where I got to a point, but by doing this work, these steps, the sponsorship, working with other men, attending meetings, being part of the fellowship, doing all of that, the daily obsession I had to drink, the one that I wanted to take my own life over, that one went away. It went away. And as they said it would, I don't know when, but the obsession to drink went away. And those 10-step promises says, you know, you're going to reach a position of neutrality, safe and protected. You're not fighting anything, not just booze. You're not fighting anything anymore. And that's all I ever wanted. But see, the thing is right after that, here's some black and white letters that are in here. It's on page 85, I believe. But right after those 10-step promises is a warning. And I can't describe it anything other than a warning, because I have failed to heed it over the course of my sobriety. And that warning is that watch your butt. You better not let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on your laurels. My laurels are, hey, I'm sober, I got this coin, I got double-digit sobriety, I joined a group, I did all this stuff. Those are my laurels. That's what happened yesterday. It says don't let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on your laurels, because you're in trouble if you do, because alcohol is a subtle form. And then it explains why. It says that the alls I really have, take my coin, set it aside, don't mean nothing. I mean, it means a lot. Let me say that. It means a lot that I've been able to do that. And for everyone getting coins, it's a big thing. But that isn't going to save me. That isn't going to save me. Meetings I love, fellowship I love, but those are human powers, and I'm beyond them. My sponsor I love, that's a human power. That's not going to save me. The fellowship, the sponsorship, the attendance at meetings, everything that's in the things, these are not the things that are going to save me. It's my connection to this higher power that I need to grow with. The reason that it explains in that book that I identify completely with is that it says, you know, alcohol is a subtle foe. All I have is a daily reprieve contingent on a spiritual condition. Contingent on a spiritual condition. And that spiritual condition for me is vulnerable to ego. It's vulnerable to self. You know, back in the 3rd step, I was told selfishness, self-centeredness, that's the root of your problems. That comes in many forms. Fear is part of that. All these things are part of it. That's your big problem. So that's why I needed the higher power. I needed to turn my will and my life over to a power bigger than me in order to get through this stuff. In the beginning, it was as simple as, can you possibly just believe that a power bigger than you could possibly restore you to the sanity that you lost? That's all you need for step 2. That's all I need. I'm not telling you to believe in anything particular. I'm not telling you to get on your knees and do anything like that. That's it. But what I found out was I needed to grow from there. I needed to grow a relationship. I needed to grow spiritually, because the spirituality that saved me back when I first came in is not going to sustain me. Another thing that Bill Wilson, he writes in his story, he says, you know, if a guy like me fails to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life, he will not survive the certain trials and low points ahead. He won't survive. And I've experienced some of that. Thank you. So my experience in AA is that this program saved my life. The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life. The 12 steps have enabled me to work with other men, just as a man did with me, to sit down with this book right here. When it says to pray, we pray. When it says to write, we write. When they give us promises, we look at them and we focus on them. And when they give us warnings, we pay attention to them. Someone did that for me, and I'm able to do that with other men. But I'm only able to do that with other men if I maintain that spiritual condition. Those are the rules. If I'm not spiritually fit, please explain to me what I'm going to pass on to someone else. Am I going to tell them to just go to meetings? Okay, then what? Do I tell them not to drink? If they could do that, they would need to sit there, at least in my case. If I have the ability to share with someone the same thing that saved me, and hopefully it works for them, great. But my spiritual fitness is the main thing that I try to maintain today. It is a daily work for me, and I do everything I can to do that. I want to thank you so much for letting me share.
Thank you, Billy. We were at a men's meeting a few Fridays ago, and with Billy there, and a huge thunderstorm. I was having a little bit of trouble paying attention. Billy started speaking, And then lightning hit the church and sparks came out. And I was like, okay, I'll listen to Billy. I'll listen. Thank you, Billy. All right. We encourage all attendees to participate fully in our meetings and to have a service position. If you would like to see be of service, please see our jobs coordinator, Ramiro, after the meeting. Ramiro's over there. And now let's welcome our main speaker, Ramiro. Abby. Let's welcome our main speaker, Abby.
So I have a home group. Do I have to go over? Did anybody come?
No.
All right. So I have a home group. It's called The Real Thing. It meets on Tuesday nights online. We're a women's meeting. And I have a job in my home group. And that's these are the things I was taught to do when I first got here. I'm going to tell you about my background because I have a long time to speak. So I am going to share my drunkalog and where I'm from. So I grew up in a small town with an alcoholic family. I had two older stepsisters that were alcoholic early, and both my parents. And there was a lot going on, and I was scared. But that's my thing. Like, I'm still scared. And so I grew up with a ton of fear. I was always afraid I was gonna die. You know, I would hate to go to sleep at night. I would be so grateful when I woke up in the morning. Made it through another night. And this was like starting at the age of 4. I didn't do that well in my family, although as I aged, I started to look at them as though I had somehow won the race, like I was superior in some way. I was always comparing myself to other people that drank and coming out pretty far ahead as far as I was concerned. I have a lifetime of denial about everything. I promised myself at an early age that I would never drink because I had seen the destruction that it caused, and something switched. I turned 13 and I couldn't wait, and I had my first drink. And I drank for effect immediately. I did not drink to taste anything. I didn't care what it tasted like, and I drank it with a straw. And I didn't feel anything because I drank so little, but I really pretended I did because I really wanted to. I'm a recovering people pleaser, and that's my character defect. That kind of got me through life, as far as I'm concerned. It worked for a really long time. So I had a lot of faces for different people. In other words, I was a liar. And I could be a good student. I could be a good friend. I could pretend to be a good girlfriend. And I also did whatever the hell I wanted. Because I grew up in such a small town, people pretty much knew what I was up to. But I could talk my way out of it. And there are so many situations that I was in at an early age that pointed to the fact that I was an alcoholic, or that I was becoming an alcoholic. And I really didn't believe any of it. You know, I was the person that passed out at parties. I was pretty much never faithful to anyone I dated. I got so good at drinking early that I became the designated driver by the age of 21, and I would drink. So I got really good at doing both together. I remember being pulled over. I could talk my way out of, you know, tickets or getting arrested. And again, like, I didn't see that I was doing anything wrong. I had a pretty strong sense of denial and not a lot of morals. And I hear people talk about, or, you know, have read in the Big Book about people losing their moral values at some point in their drinking. And I think I started so young that I hadn't really strongly developed morals. But I looked on the outside like I was doing pretty well, according to me. But I think I did pretty well at carrying that off. I remember when I first announced my sobriety, I had my friends say, why? You know, they knew I had trouble with alcohol, but they didn't know that I had a daily habit that was so intense because I was hiding it. One of my best friends made me promise to mention her. We are part of each other's drunkalogs. By the time she had her first drink, I had probably been drinking for a couple of years, and her first drink looked a lot different than mine. Her first drink was a sky-high cup of vodka that she drank all the way down and lost her mind and got lost and like had her mom chasing us all over town. And I was still just steadily drinking that whole night. And she used to be a member of this group, and she was upset that she couldn't be here tonight. So, hi, Maria. But anyway, for me, my drinking was, like I said, very disguised. And it really, I used it medicinally, like to treat my fear. And it worked for a really long time. And I had some fun, I think. Like, I think I thought I was having fun. Sorry, I'm umming a lot. Asking God to remove my ego. So, I'm not sure at what point my drinking became so monotonous, but I started having panic attacks, and they were kind of initiated because my father, although an alcoholic, was the calmest, like, kindest person in my life, and he had a stroke. And for me, I couldn't imagine the world without him. At that point in time, I was married and I had two little kids, and I was drinking daily, and I was just so rocked by this event that my drinking picked up more, you know, I mean. Anybody who has anxiety knows that alcohol feels like the solution until the next day. And so I started living this very repetitive kind of Groundhog's Day existence where I would promise myself in the morning that I wouldn't drink again that day because I had already given up ever again. And I had already given up, you know, taking any real amount of time off. But I would say maybe I could just not drink tonight. And I would watch myself throughout the day have my mind changed and really wondered every night how that had happened. And I didn't know that I was experiencing obsession, and I didn't know that if I promised myself I would only have one drink, that I couldn't because of the craving that would set in. What I thought was I just had this strange mind-changing event happen daily. And around that time, because I started seeking help for my panic attacks, I had a couple of people ask me if I thought I had a problem with alcohol. And for me, that was like such an odd question. I was waiting for someone to tell me I had a problem with alcohol so I could prove to them that I didn't, because I had been busy doing that my whole life. So both the people who asked me that refused to answer the question when I turned the question around on them and said, do you think I have a problem? And both people said, that's for you to answer, in more or less so many words. And that is the best thing that could have ever happened to me. Because for the first time, I started to look at myself honestly and look at my patterns honestly. And really only about drinking at this point. Like, I just saw that every day I was changing my mind. And I started to slowly, over the course of a year, start to understand that I couldn't have one drink, that I really didn't want to have one drink. I started to see myself almost as an out-of-body experience, like looking down, seeing how one drink didn't taste good and two drinks didn't taste good. And I have a friend who used to say, or probably still does, I was always two beers shy of the perfect buzz. And that was true for me, no matter where I was or what condition I was in. There was never going to be enough alcohol. And for me to start to realize that was incredibly hard. I was losing my love affair with alcohol. I knew that the only way I could continue to live would be to stop. Meanwhile, there was other stuff going on. Like, I was feeling like I was literally killing myself with alcohol. My body hurt, ached. I had hangovers every single day. I was jealous of my other family members who never got hangovers. I really felt the effects of alcohol, you know. It was sad. I started to feel like the world was turning gray. And I was disconnected. I was definitely on my own as far as I was concerned. Did not have a good relationship with my husband. I cherished my kids more than anything. Like, I remember how I would understand that was how much fear I had about their safety. You know, like, if I'm really afraid for your safety, then I really love you. And I was really just such a scared mom. That did not stop me from drinking the moment I got home with them. You know, I would, as I said, my mind would change over the course of the day at work, and I would rush to pick them up and rush to get them home, and then I would stick these two sweet little kids in front of the TV so that I could drink. And I had a habit of opening that first beer and calling one of my sisters, and we would talk on the phone every single night and talk about the exact same thing, which was how terrible our parents were. And we never came to any conclusion. We never solved any problem. We just complained and reopened all these wounds on a nightly basis. And that to me was relaxing. Sometimes my husband would come home early and surprise me, and I would be really upset then. He'd be like, I'm home, and I'd be like, you know, major swear word. And I had systems of, like, taking care of empties and, you know, hiding beer. And, you know, look, beer was my drink of choice because I could drink that for a really long amount of time before I would pass out. So I had all these, you know, systems in place where I would buy what I, well, he was my supplier. So he would buy me a case and him a case, and I did not like his beer. But to make sure he didn't know how much I was drinking, I would drink some of his and some of mine, so that he thought we were on par. And he really got to a point in our relationship where he refused to drink with me, which did not make him more attractive. So him coming home early anytime, him coming home was just a bummer. And I would, you know, I would put my children to bed and spend this precious time with them, and half the time pass out in their beds. If I were lucky, I'd get back downstairs, have another beer, because that's really what I was looking forward to, and then I would always fall asleep on the couch. And that was my life. And it happened day after day after day. It was so boring and so gray and so dull and so sad. And, you know, sometimes there was excitement. Like, maybe once a week, my husband and I would get in a fight, and I would be really full of rage. And I would wake up in the morning and have no idea what we fought about. And then I would try everything I could to get him to apologize for whatever I thought he had done, which I never knew. But I just wanted him to apologize so that we could move on and I wouldn't have to take any responsibility. I was getting good at making him do that. And So after watching my boring story happen over and over again, I decided to stop drinking, which is like, that's a miracle in and of itself, right? Because I had tried day after day, you know, well, maybe just take Sundays off, you know, like, okay, a whole week. No, I could not do it. I just couldn't go a day without drinking. And I chose a date and I quit drinking for the first time. And, you know, I didn't have alcohol for the first time in more than a week, probably in like 15 years. And my life started to get a little better. It was amazing. I stopped fighting with my husband. And I was a much better mom. And I even was a little bit present. But over time, I started to feel really antsy. Someone else mentioned, like, alcohol is, if you tell me not to drink, I'm just losing the alcohol, but something else will pop up. And I started looking for something else to pop up. You know, I considered smoking pot. I considered, like, you know, more sugar, like that kind of thing. Like, what is it? What is it at the end of the day that I could have that would actually make me feel better or feel anything, really, besides agitation, excuse me. So after a few months of this, I also, by the way, I lost all my friends, my drinking buddies, that were my neighbors. They were not interested in me anymore. So I called my friend Maria, and I said, I haven't had a drink in a few months, and I don't know what to do with myself. And she said, why don't you go to AA? I said, no way. No thanks. And she said, oh, okay, well then why don't you just go try some controlled drinking? And I was outraged. Like, I was so mad at that suggestion because I knew what it had taken for me to stop drinking in the first place. And I didn't think I could do it again. And so I went to AA. And the first meeting I went to was a total disappointment. I did not admit that I was new. They said, anyone new here, we can start on step one. I did not raise my hand because I needed you to think I was a professional or whatever. I don't know. Like, what did I want you to think? I didn't want your help, I guess. So they're on the second half of step 12, and everybody was talking about the problems that they had overcome. And all I was hearing was the problems that they had. And now here I am, still in total denial. I don't think I'm an alcoholic because I quit on my own. I don't know that I have any problems because it's always been everybody else. And I'm listening to these people talk about depression and anxiety and all these things. By the way, I had panic attacks prior to this and I didn't think I had anxiety. So I was so turned off. I'm like, these people are so depressing. I'm definitely not an alcoholic. So this woman had come up to me and she said, here's my name, my phone number, my email address, like 20 ways to get in touch with me. Call me. And I left that meeting with this paper in my hand and thought, oh God, now I have to call this woman, but I'm not an alcoholic and I'm not going back to AA. In comes people pleasing. 2 weeks later, I'm like, oh, I have to let her know where I am. So I email her because it was the most removed way to talk to her. And I tell her, thank you so much. You're probably wondering where I am, but I've decided I'm not an alcoholic. And but thanks anyway, it was really nice of you to give me your number. And she said, oh great, okay, let's meet at this meeting on Sunday night and we'll talk about it. And I was like, oh okay, shoot, now I have to go to this meeting because I couldn't say no. Thank you God, right? Thank you for my defects of character. So I showed up at this meeting, and it was a speaker meeting, and I totally identified, and I never looked back after that. And she became my sponsor. And we started working the steps almost immediately. So that is just, like, the beginning. Like, right? That's just the beginning of our story. Now, I'm sober in AA. And my spiritual experience is a gradual yet steady from the very beginning. Like, I started learning how to be honest with a person about everything right off the bat. And I had this sensation that my world was being turned on its side. Like, I just was no longer me. And it was scary, but really exhilarating. And I started hanging around with other people that were working the steps for the first time. And we would help each other, you know, understand what was happening or where could we write to actually get this thing done. You know, a fellowship started to form around me. And I was, you know, my defects were serving me, right? I was learning to do what I was told all the way. And I was, you know, I had a big library of self-help books, and I was a psych major, and I, you know, I really thought, none of this shit works. Excuse my language, sorry. None of this stuff works. And I realized after I started doing the steps, it's because I had never done any of it. You know, I might have read about doing some of it, but I'd always put the books down and never completed them. And in AA, you know, I really needed to have this work for me. I didn't want to go through another sobriety. I wanted this to be it. And I was willing to do whatever it took. And that willingness was brand new for me. I think I always thought I knew better than everyone else. And I think that kind of came from my upbringing, where again, I was seeing myself as better than my family. And my family started to believe it too, you know, before my sobriety. Like, they would come to me and I would solve their problems. They wouldn't do what I said, and I would be resentful at them. But now in AA, I was learning something different. You know, I was learning how to keep my eyes on my recovery. And I was learning how, like, when I share about me, I don't share about you. I was learning how the most important thing would be for me to develop a relationship with a higher power, and how I would know that that was happening. You know, I would start to feel different, and I was feeling different. And I was seeing my higher power in my fellows. And so many things came of that. You know, we started a really amazing meeting, and we had a lot of people that came, and I sponsored a lot of people, and you know, so many beautiful things happened. You know, I started to learn about the traditions and a little bit about the concepts. I was able to be a GSR, attend assemblies, like meet people who have been around the program of AA for a really long time and learn what deeper meanings of spirituality can look like in AA. I think that first year for me was really beautiful and intense, and as the year ended, I wrapped up my step work, and I was making amends. And I think for me, the ninth step was the most humbling and the most freeing. And so I really felt like I was floating. And as I look back, I think, well, did that change? Is that over? Is it different? And the answer is yes. It's always different and it's always changing. And my concept of a higher power is always changing. And I've done different spiritual, or I've gone in different spiritual directions over time. And I continue to try to see what fits in my life now. And it just keeps changing. So, you know, I had a period of time where I was really just going by the book and just being very, like, true to the book, the big book. And then I started, got my friends sucked into, like, Catholicism, which I'm not Catholic, and I don't really, never agreed with the church, but I went on this retreat called Curcio, and I had, like, this new experience. And I had a Catholic priest tell me I didn't have to be Catholic. And I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. And he told me, which I'll never forget, that AA offers everything that I need, including support, fellowship, direction, a way to make amends. So then I started talking to people about Buddhism, and I ended up in meditation groups for a few years. So these are outside things that I experience as a result of going through these steps and having a spiritual experience or awakening that allows me to kind of continue to pursue a relationship with whatever I define my higher power to be. I am constantly brought back to different parts of the Big Book that help me realign with where I'm at. Yesterday at my meeting, we read, actually I think I want to read a little bit of it, but I'm sure you've all heard, well, most of you have heard this, but the chapter in the back about acceptance. And it's so well written, and the page that we usually hear is, I think it's 417, but "And acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. When I am disturbed, it is because I find some person, place, thing, or situation, some fact of my life, unacceptable to me. And I can find that no serenity, I can find no serenity until I accept that person, place, thing, or situation as being exactly the way it is supposed to be at this moment. Nothing, absolutely nothing, happens in God's world by mistake. Until I could accept my alcoholism, I could not stay sober. Unless I accept the life completely on life's terms, I cannot be happy. I need to concentrate not so much on what needs to be changed in the world as on what needs to be changed in me and in my attitudes." So as I read that, we read that last night, I thought so hard about that. And all this whole reading is about that in different ways. And I see now that, like, that is what I'm trying to do. I still have a tendency of blaming you for how I feel. I still have a tendency to think that I'm a victim of whatever's happening. I want to come here and tell you all the things I've gotten through in sobriety so you think I am strong, but I'm not. Like, I've just done what I'm supposed to do. I've come to this program asking for help so that I can stay sober. And what I've gotten is a way to not just be sober, but to be happy. And then, you know, I'll leave here tonight, and depending on my spiritual condition after this share, I may scream at somebody with my windows closed in my car about their driving, you know, and that is how I am, you know. And that happened to me today on the way here. Like, I was doing fine, and then I realized I was not going to get here at exactly quarter of. And then someone did something in front of me, I don't even remember what, and I swore at them with my windows closed. And I thought, that's not fit spiritual condition. And then I thought, it's also a lot of progress. It is also a lot of progress, and I have to remember that. I'm going to want to work toward perfection. This book tells me I should. And I want to, because I feel better when I do. But I'm also going to have to accept where I'm at. And I have to accept that life is exactly how it is. Sobriety has given me a ton of chances that I wouldn't have had without it. I have been able to go back to school. I have survived the death of my father. I have survived the divorce that I thought I would never stay sober through. I have built, you know, a new life, basically, not just a sober life, but one that is me being a single parent, more or less. I have started a new career. I am working harder now than I ever have in my life, and I feel like I'm at the age where that probably shouldn't be the case. But my life is pretty amazing. If I look at my life for exactly how it is today, I can tell you that my life is amazing. If I look at it how I feel in any given moment, that is not always the case. I don't feel great all the time. I feel relatively happy most of the time. But I do let things bother me. And, you know, goals are to live life like a loose rope. That is something that used to be said all the time when I was young in AA. And I would like to live life that way. I would like to not be affected by other people's stuff. I would like to just be A-okay all the time. And I think that there are days when that can absolutely happen for me if I continue to do this work. And when things go badly for me, I still turn back to this work. For me, I like to do step 11 every day, and that doesn't look the same every day. But when I start to go off the beam a bit, I will turn this, you know, turn to pages 84 through 88, and I will start to answer the questions with pen and paper, and I will start to write a list of things that I'm resentful about, and start to make amends right away if there are any to be made, or take corrective action. And when I do that, and that probably happens once a week or once every 2 weeks, I feel remarkably better. And then I get the opportunity to behave well and to do things better and to continue to seek both spiritually and, you know, for my own mental health. So that was a lot of stuff. I'm so glad I'm out of time. Thank you for listening.